Hello, this is Paul Green, chairman of the City Club of Chicago and WGN political analyst. Today at the City Club, we had Karen Lewis, president of Chicago Teachers Union, who in her usual hard-nosed, very funny, and at times very strong speech, talked about the need for the Chicago Public Schools and the school board to find a way to find sustainable revenue and long-term revenue. She basically disregarded the fact finder's report as being one-sided, and she admitted that the finances for the school are in a meltdown, but that there are ways to get around it. And at the end of her talk, she did attack Governor Rauner, calling him, among other things, a liar and the best recruiter for ISIS, which might have been a tad over the top.
It's always nice to sell out the City Club. And it's always a pleasure to stand before you. And I want to thank Jay Doherty, as always, for the invitation. And I look forward to our exchange at the end of my remarks, which I will not keep brief, but we will still have a meaningful question and answer period. So let's cut to the chase. Is the city of Chicago headed towards another teacher strike? Yes. Should this happen, it'll be the third time since 2012. We have 26 more days of cooling off as required by state law. Thank you, Jim Franzik. And then our members will decide whether CTU will deliver a 10-day notice of our intent to strike. No decision has been made, and I will tell you all, as I've told the press a number of times, I'm not going to give out any strategy. We will not hand over our playbook to CPS and their broke on purpose bureaucrats. They have their strategy and we have ours. Theirs will cripple the teaching force and ours will protect it and the students we serve. But neither side has a crystal ball. While contract negotiations have not yet yielded the results we want, we remain at the table, but we cannot rule out a strike. I know some of you are saying, especially, thank you, especially the people on Tribune's editorial board, that the CTU should just roll over and accept the contract being offered to our members. Again, teachers, paraprofessionals, and clinicians elected me and three others to this office to carry out their wishes in collective bargaining, not to be autocratic dictators who tell them who's who and what's what. And we have a deal when they say we have a deal. As brilliantly stated by our fact-finding panel member, Attorney Robert Block, who's here, I believe, somewhere. Oh, he's not. He's high. There he is. I want to tell you what he said in the fact-finder's report. He said the neutral fact-finder's report was dead on arrival. The reality is the Chicago Board of Education cannot afford to sign a contract with the Chicago Teachers Union. CPS finances have surpassed the danger zone and are now nearing a meltdown. We need revenue solutions to finance public education, not more cuts to the system, which has already been cut well past the bone and now threatens vital organs. The recommended contract proposal, which CPS now tells us it can no longer afford, actually reduces teacher and PSRP pay over the four-year period of the contract. It offered no solution to ballooning class sizes, even with the positive non-economic elements to the contract designed to enhance instruction and the academic environment for students. The CTU cannot ignore the devastating economic impact this contract would have on our members. Cutting educator compensation is not the answer to CPS's extreme financial problems. The district desperately needs sustainable, stable, and increasing revenue to finance its operations. Without it, the mayor's handpicked Board of Ed cannot afford any contract proposal, even its own. So what then is the answer? Sustainable revenue, long-term revenue. Otherwise, we will be in the same position year after year after year. Today, a group of our members is in Springfield lobbying for revenue solutions. CPS stays on its strange message about joining them in Springfield, but for what purpose? We're not going hand in hand with them to cut our own throats. CPS claims a deficit of $1.1 billion for next year, although they have recently said they've already found ways to reduce this budget deficit by $335 million. However, those reductions come at a great cost to our members and the schools. About $120 million of that amount is from keeping in place the February cuts to school budgets for all of next year. Another $130 million comes from eliminating the CTU pension pickup, which is the result of a 7% pay cut for our members. So full funding for CPS means we still need to close the full budget deficit of $1 billion. But to get us to have on par per pupil funding for the classroom, which is about $20,000 at some of the richest districts in the state, Winnetka, we're talking about getting, you know, no disrespect to Winnetka, you know, we just say, that's what y'all spend, we'd like to do that too. So we're getting thousands more pupils, and we need billions more in annual revenue for the schools that Chicago's students deserve. The CTU has been clear on its revenue positions: tax the rich, rein in the banks, and close the budget gap. Structural solutions require progressive income tax. We are also looking at a way to tax the billions traded on the Chicago Board of Trade, which currently is at no tax. And as I've said before, we need to close some corporate loopholes. Mr. Claypool and the rest of his team should repurpose the district's administrative direction and actually get back to managing the business of the district. They have spent hundreds of millions of dollars outsourcing management functions. Just recently, we have learned that CPS intends to phase out unionized building engineers, people who provide a critical function in our buildings. And we have seen what has happened with Aramark, even though they told me today that the dirty buildings, the rodents, and the overall filth making teaching and learning environments unsafe has been dealt with. So for those of you in the school still, we'll find out. It has been 6 months after the first of three carbon monoxide poisoning incidents in CPS buildings, and the CTU has yet to be provided with full reports of the poisoning of educators, students, and other school personnel. The three incidents of carbon monoxide poisoning the union is investigating are at Prussing Elementary School, Shields Elementary School, and Mann Elementary School. Hundreds of students and staff were poisoned and evacuated from these schools. We are demanding answers, and we implore CPS to honor our FOIA requests on the matter. How does this happen in the 21st century school system? At the June 2015 Chicago Board of Education meeting, CPS voted unanimously to approve a $30 million four-year contract with RCM Technologies for supplemental nursing services, professional development, and scheduling. 9 months after the RCM contract was signed, a contract that was promoted as a cost-saving move, nurses throughout the district are reporting shocking stories of untrained, contracted nurses who cannot perform basic tasks like operating an EpiPen. And need I remind you of the embarrassing soup scandal that will send one hand-picked CPS CEO to prison? This is why there's rampant distrust of Chicago public schools. Gross mismanagement, the closing of schools, the starving of school budgets, the disruption of education services, the dismantling of special education programs, the revolving door at central office, and the removal beloved teachers, coaches, and school employees who have made meaningful differences in the lives of so many is the rule of the day. Tom Donovan asked me today how we're getting along with the new administration. And I had to tell him the truth. We don't really know anybody that's still there. In special ed, there's one person that was there when we took office in 2010. How do you develop relationships and work with people? How do you do that when they're never there for more than 15 minutes? How does this provide our students with high-quality, world-class education? So we see this as an assault on public education. We see this as an assault on public school educators, and we know this is an assault on our students' futures. Why are they doing all this school-based experiments that will ultimately lead to a decline in the educational product in Chicago? All of these amount to a war on Chicago's youth because education is a lifeline out of poverty and away from neighborhood violence and marginalization. Our schools are places where dreams become realized, places where our students are inspired not only to change their lives, but to enhance the lives of others and improve the world in which we live. Let's look at this war on youth. In terms of youth property, more than 1.3 million children in the Chicago metro area are in poverty, meaning 14%, or at least one in five children in Chicago, 89% of whom we teach in our schools. In addition, they are not invisible. One in five residents resides in deep poverty, and they live in the neighborhoods of Burnside, Riverdale, Inglewood, East Garfield Park, North Lawndale, Washington Park, and West Garfield Park. According to the Chicago Youth Justice Data Project, black youth are 37% of the population, but 79% of the arrests. Latino youth are 40% of the population and 18% of arrests. In terms of homeless children, during the 2013-2014 school year, 22,144 students in CPS were classified as homeless. And this is according to the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless. They were 84.4% African American, 12.12% Latino, 1.6% white, and 1.6% from other ethnicities. It was also noted that of the 4,369 homeless students who were also identified with a disability, that appropriate supports were more difficult to obtain, which is why we support Skinny Sheehan so hard on a regular basis. In terms of children in state custody or care, In Illinois, the percentage of wards that spend more than 2 years in state custody is nearly twice as high as in other states. Despite its problems and perceptions in the communities of color, the Department of Children and Family Services can be a lifeline for children in crisis. The budget appropriations for this critical agency. In fiscal year 15, the appropriation was $1,165,961.80. In fiscal year 16, it was $10,511. $10,000. That's a difference of negative 99%. So what's going on here? This is not just statistical fodder. These numbers represent real people and real lives. We give tax breaks to the wealthy and we give banks a pass, yet we cut the budgets that help poor, troubled children to the bare bones. And you wonder why young people are angry and vocal about the political hypocrisy going on? Rauner is the new ISIS recruit. If a man tells you he loves America yet hates labor, he is a liar. There is no America without labor, and to fleece one is to rob the other. Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln said that. Our beloved Illinois president. I say today that if Governor Rauner says he loves Illinois, yet he hates labor, then he's a liar. There is no Illinois without labor, and to fleece one is to rob the other. Yeah, I said it. Yes, I said it. Now say it again. Bruce Rauner is a liar, and you know, I've been reading in the news lately all about these ISIS recruits popping up all over the place. Has Homeland Security checked this man out yet? Because the things he's doing look like acts of terror on poor and working class people. People are hurting across Illinois while the so-called governor plays chicken with the state budget. He has launched a personal crusade against the Chicago Teachers Union and every other labor organization in our state. Rauner understands that strong labor means those who toil in these systems should reap their fair share of the wealth, stability, and progress that they help produce. The governor's vicious attacks on CTU and District 299, quite frankly, is a purposeful distraction to redirect our attention from his inability to govern and manage the state's finances. In addition, his holy war does not stop there. He is destroying the lives of the disabled, college students, the elderly, the poor, the displaced, and the dispossessed. His turn us down agenda is not just being felt in Chicago, but throughout the state. The Eastside Health District facility in East St. Louis will have to close its family case management unit by the end of the week, affecting new mothers and their infants. Organizations that provide meals to seniors who are food insecure, of which 60% are women, are offering scaled-down services or none at all. Meals on Wheels, a provider to those seniors and others with disability, has had to close some locations and stop receiving funding in July, all of this at a time when one in six people in Cook County face food instability. I'm generalizing here, but I find it amazing when I talk to people that just because someone is wealthy, this person is somehow smarter than the rest of us. So you know the old line, if you're so smart, why ain't you rich? That kind of thing. Intellect may have nothing to do with one's ability to obtain capital, because if that were the case, all of the fine people at Chicago Public Schools would have figured it out by now. Rauner lacks the ability to govern. He purchased his seat, conned the people of Illinois, and is clueless on how to turn around Illinois to better serve its citizens. And as a slap in the face, he even said he would take no salary. Therefore, what is a governor's seat about? It is about power, plain and simple. Despite his constant attacks on the Chicago Teachers Union, he's had no problem clouding his daughter into Walter Payton High School, where CTU members work. We find it so ironic that Mr. Rauner blames CPS teachers for failing students, yet chooses to send his daughter to a city school instead of New Trier, one of the most highly funded schools in the state and the nation. With nine houses, who knows where he and his children actually live when he clouded his daughter into that school. But according to the 2014 stats of out-of-district tuition rates of $11,707, the governor owes the school district $46,828. Maybe we ought to call the governor and ask him to pay his fair share. I told you. The so-called governor clouds his child into one of our high schools, but then has the audacity to deny about 130,000 college students MAP grants to assist them in their higher education. He has threatened to close Chicago State, a predominantly African-American university that will reportedly graduate 3 physicists this school year. It should also be noted that more than half, that's 58% of the MAP recipients, are so low income that the federal government does not consider them able to pay or to contribute any resources for their college tuition. In 2014, the average family income of a dependent or traditional MAP recipient was $30,000 per year. And the average income of an independent or not traditional MAP recipient was $16,000. 16. Please understand this. Of the undergraduates at Illinois public universities who identify themselves as Black or Latino, more than half receive a MAP grant. Despite their financial challenges, MAP recipients graduate from college at about the same rates as their peers in these same institutions. MAP recipients are enrolled in all sectors of higher education, with the largest percentage of students in the community college sector. So while Rauner is busy blocking teens and young adults from pursuing higher education, on the local level, he and his allies, such as our dear mayor and billionaire quasi-school consultant Ken Griffin, are destroying K through 12 education in Chicago. Do you see a pattern here? To quote Henry Giroux, the greatest threat to our children does not come from lowered educational standards or the absence of privatized choice schemes or the lack of rigid testing measures. On the contrary, it comes from a society that refuses to view children as a social investment, one that consigns 16.3 million children to live in poverty, reduces critical learning to massive testing programs, promotes policies that eliminate most crucial health and public services, and defines masculinity through the degrading celebration of a gun culture, extreme sports, and the spectacles of violence that permeate corporate-controlled media industries. We have a crisis of values in our city and in Illinois, and we need to change that conversation. Someone asked me, Karen Lewis, what will you tell parents if teachers go on strike? I tell them to join us in the movement to protect our students, their children, and the future of public education. Join us in the fight against this austerity agenda that targets the young and old, those considered weak, powerless, and voiceless. Teachers, paraprofessionals, and clinicians are not the problem. We have families, we pay taxes, we live under extreme economic conditions that call on us to continue to give up more and more in a ham and egg justice scenario. We drop the ham, which means the whole leg, and CPS gives up an egg and keeps on moving. I want parents to know that their children are not pawns or points on a board. If adults do not fight for their futures, who will? They will only inherit the mess we leave behind. Fighting is not easy, it is not pretty, even though you know. I work at it. Whose side are you on? It's an old saying. Whose side are you on? If you say you're on the freedom side, then that means you will join us in asking the rich to pay their fair share, calling on the city and state to stop the attacks on public and higher education, in asking the banks to end their predatory deals that strip vital dollars from our schools, and in fighting for stronger neighborhoods and job creation and access to health care and not just health insurance. These are not ideals. This is a necessary framework for public policy and democracy if we are to have a just school system and a just Chicago. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mush. We'll start with this one because I always take the most legible. Don Schellenberger. Isn't the reason the proposed settlement was rejected was not because of content, but on principle, and secondly, as a way to say in your face to Mayor Emanuel and Governor Rauner. Thirdly, aren't you leaving CPS with little choice but to file for bankruptcy? Always good to start off with an easy question.
Okay, so I don't know you, Don, but I'm assuming that, because you didn't list your affiliation, but you said, isn't the reason not because of content but on principle? And secondly, as a way to say in your face to Mayor Emanuel? The answer to that is no, we are not petulant little children. We may teach them, but we are not them. So let's be clear about that. Thirdly, aren't you leaving CPS with little choice but to file for bankruptcy? You know, CPS could do a whole lot of things. They could do a whole lot of things that we have been talking to them about for quite some time. For whatever reason they choose not to, you need to ask them, not me. You know, I'm not the one making those decisions, because if I were making the decisions at CPS, this stuff would have been done.
Okay, I'll save that one. give you a little breather now. Lee Nevels, a CTU delegate and CPS therapist.
Occupation.
The mayor and his appointed board pushed for a longer school day and a longer year. It is obvious they can't afford it. Why don't they roll back the day and year? Parents didn't like it, right?
Because the mayor said that's what he ran on. That's what he ran on. That's what he won his election on. So that's what he told me. Because I asked. You know I had to ask. You know, why are you so stuck on this? I ran on it. So, I mean, you talk about somebody being stuck. It's not us. Look at what's going on. They literally, if you're putting people on furlough, you clearly can't afford the year you've put in place. You shouldn't have to furlough people. You should just say, wow, the school year's too long. You know, next year we'll do something else. But no, we can't do that. So parents did not care for it. No, they didn't. And they complained. But, you know, once you get used to doing something, you know, you get used to being abused. You just, you know, think that's normal.
Okay.
Got it.
You bring in people who actually type their question, which was really...
Whoa. That's impressive.
Well, this is obviously, we're playing with a fast crowd here. Here we go. Mrs. Jane Johnson, member of the City Club, a former CPS teacher and CTU member. Whatever happened to Leave No Child Behind promise, because the CTU at this time does not appear to be representing the best interests of its members or children, taking things that does not belong to them or demonstrate the mission of education and telling this generation of parents to step up. Not quite sure I understand your question. I hope Ms. Lewis does.
I don't. So.
Okay, moving on.
Yeah, I wish I could answer that.
All right.
But when you have time to type it, you must have thought about it, yeah. Right? So let's try to go somewhere with it. Okay?
Mark Weiermiller. Where are you, Mark? Oh, you're right here. A man who is this close to Bernie Sanders. Notice the fingers. Okay. But he has a mug. CPS has 6,000 less students this year compared to 2014. With Chicago losing population, are the Chicago property taxpayers at a tipping point? Actually a good question.
It's an excellent question. I think, you know, let's not forget that the city taxes have a lot to do with the fact that the state doesn't appropriately fund public education. And that's what we're down in Springfield right now, because that is one of the main functions of state government, is to fund education. They don't do their share. But I think the other problem is that Chicago property taxpayers, of which I am one, and I would assume almost everybody sitting here is, and those of us that work for CPS for sure are, because we are required to live in the city, which, you know what, I am for. Because when you live in the city, you are more likely to support those city institutions. So I am definitely for that. Are they at a tipping point? Actually, we have a significantly lower tax structure than some of the surrounding. Who lives in Oak Park? You guys got big, giant taxes, you know. My best friend lives in Oak Park. I think my attorney lives in Oak Park. They have huge taxes. You don't hear them complaining about property taxes because they care about having a good school system, because the school system is working for the people there. All right, so are we at a tipping point? I don't know what that means, you know. Probably not. But hopefully people will realize that you get what you pay for. If you don't want to pay for stuff, then you're going to get raggedy stuff. It's just that simple.
Words to live by. Okay.
Yes, Mama. Don Schellenberger, where are you? Raise your hand. Right there. You're asking two questions. Normally we don't do this, but it's the only question I have left. So when Karen speaks, there are a few questions. Here we go. Since, always starts off with since. It is my understanding you have people in Springfield today, correct?
Two busloads.
Who are lobbying for funding. Given the fact you just rejected the contract without any justifiable reason, I'm sure you agree with that phrase.
Wrong.
It's like a comedy. For having done so, how can you expect suburban and downstate legislators, Democrat and Republican alike, to look favorably upon your request for additional funding? Last part's a pretty good question.
All right, so let me deal with that, because the first part is just commentary, not a question. And there's nothing wrong with that. But first of all, it is not just Chicago that suffers from really inequitable funding. Let's be clear about that. It's not just Chicago. A lot of the areas in downstate Illinois have the same challenges that we have. And the key is to find equitable funding for the state. We're not asking for a special deal. We're not asking people for that because we know what will be said about that. So that's not what this is about. What we are saying is that there's a way to do things, but we cannot just sit down and shut up. I think that's the biggest problem that I'm hearing among people that don't think that we should say no to something that is unfair to us. So then how do you ever get fair if you continue to take the abuse? We are not abused children, abused wives and husbands. That's not who we are. And we are also teaching our students that they need to stand up. Parents need to stand up for their rights, because if you don't stand up, these rich people will mow you down.
All right. I mean, you're, as usual, you're on your roll here. All right, Bob. Bob Grover. Where are you, Bob? Retired? Former teacher? Say yes, it makes it better. Okay, good. Historically, and he's a City Club member, historically, to what extent have your members benefited from previous strikes? My experience is that everyone loses from a lengthy teacher strike. Another good question.
Well, I think it depends, you know, from the very beginning. I mean, my parents were always on strike. I don't remember that, and they seem to be okay with it. And, you know, I think that it depends on if you have to look at each contract. The key is, in any kind of contract negotiation, nobody gets everything they want. You know, that's not a negotiation, and that's somebody just winning, right? So the key to winning a strike is winning the kinds of things that will help us move forward. And I know that doesn't sound like, oh, you're going to get X amount of dollars out of this or that. We understand that the cupboards are fairly bare and people are looking at crumbs. But what we do say is we want the ability to have you rearrange how you dole out the crumbs. Why can't the banks get paid last? Why can't these people get paid last? Why can't vendors, and why do we have to outsource our fields? Why are nurses being outsourced? You know, why are these things that we don't even have nurses in every school anymore? You know, there's so many different things that we have won. We have won the ability to sit down and really have conversations in our buildings with our administrators. I think if you look across the board, we're getting along better with the principals because they're under the same kind of crazy mandates too. So the keys become every time we've lost something, but we've gained something. And I think that's the way it's going to be this time too. But we're not going to lose everything. If you don't have money, then there's some things you're going to have to give up. And that's what we've been saying over and over and over again. Some people hear us, but they're not always the decision makers. And that's why we have to change the governance of the Chicago Public Schools. We need an elected representative school board. Thank you.
One more. That's it. Last question, by the way, Mr. Franzik was writing vision. You know, he said, we're not going to get everything. I think he was writing that down.
He already knows that because he came up with something even crazier, but that's all right. We'll talk about that later.
You two are going to be on team up on the road. Okay. Holly, how do you pronounce your last name? Good. Very short question. What is your initial reaction to CPS call today for binding arbitration?
No.
How about a big round of applause for Carol Lewis?
Seriously, Holly, I didn't know about it until the press called me. I really didn't know about it because, of course, Forrest Claypool must not have my phone number. I have his, but for some reason he didn't think it was necessary to call me and tell me this is what he was asking for. We don't need binding arbitration because we can strike. So his call for binding arbitration has other implications to it. So I think we need to just continue. We got 26 more days to work something out. That's his timeline.
How about a big round of applause for our speaker?
Thank you, my God.